Welcome to the Abnormally Funny People Show with your hosts, Simon Minty and Steve Best. This podcast is sponsored by Barclays. For more information, please see our website, abnormallyfunnypeople.com. We hope you enjoy the show.
It's show 10.
We've reached double figures, Mr. Simon Minty.
Indeed we have, Steve Best.
So on to the show. Is it a first for us?
I think we just agreed it's our 10th.
Very funny, very funny. But it's the 10th. It's the first.
I can't believe you wrote that joke.
Did I?
And now you're taking the mickey out of it.
I am a little bit. But it's the first in that it's the first time we've had guests on who are married to each other.
Nice.
Isn't it?
So let's meet them. One part of this marriage is Kiranna Stammell.
Hello.
She started out as a dancer, she still is one, but now is also a very successful actor, amongst other people, has acted alongside Geoffrey Rush and Ricky Gervais, and she's just finished a run for National Theatre, their production of Great Britain.
Hello, thank you.
Hello again.
Thank you for noticing.
And we have Gareth Bulliner, a stand-up comedian and actor, recently making his TV acting debut playing Macca in Coronation Street. And together... they run a production company called A Little Commitment, which produces both children's theatre, adult comedy shows and disability-led workshops.
OK, shortly we're going to be asking our guests for their moment of the month, which should be something interesting and disability-related from the recent past.
And then we will spend some time talking to them about their work.
We also have a new part of the show. This is Robin Christofferson, who's from AbilityNet, and he's going to be talking to us about all the kind of news around technology and gadgets and disability.
And we're going to review an audiobook called Why Are You Pretending to Be Normal? By Phil Friend and David Rees.
We'll finish, as always, with your messages to us.
If you'd like to get in touch, you can email us on podcast@abnormallyfunnypeople.com.
Okay, let's kick off with moment of the month. Kiranna, your moment.
Oh, okay. I was in a supermarket. I was in a supermarket with my husband.
And it was outside initially.
What do you mean outside?
It started off outside.
It started outside the supermarket.
It did start outside. It's a shared story.
Well, do you want to tell the first bit of the story? Because you saw the first bit, and then I got the end. It was like an act of, a play of two acts.
Yeah, so we were outside the supermarket.
This is your double act.
That's unintentional completely, okay. But this our moment of the month happened together, which often now our moments of the month do happen when we're together, because we're together quite a bit.
Yeah, fairly frequently.
So we were walking into our local Tesco, and just before we were walking in, Kiranna missed it because she's kind of oblivious because she experiences discrimination probably on a daily basis. So we were outside, and as we were walking in, there was a bunch of sort of very young girls, about 18, 17. And as soon as they saw Kiranna, Kiranna didn't hear it. She missed it, but they properly did an ah, because in their heads, she looked cute and needed to be objectified.
For listener, both Kiranna short as well.
Oh, yeah, sorry,
yeah,
Kiranna has
dwarfism. I always forget that we do that on radio or podcast.
So I probably should have not mentioned it, because if Kiranna's missed it, I don't need to flag it back in her face. But it annoyed me. And then when I walked in, I just happened to mention, oh, I can't believe those girls just argue. Because it was just really annoying.
But I hadn't seen it, so I just kind of thought, whatever, you know. It's weird. I sort of seem to run a bit of a card system. You get a yellow card, and then if it's in my face, you know, then I'll red card you. But I thought, you know, I missed it, let it go. The girls are a bit dumb. Their eyebrows are ridiculous. I will set it free.
But we did talk about hindsight, you see. Because when we came in, we both said, I wish we'd said this.
Yes. And then what happened was, queued up for the counter. There I am, and Gareth was at the counter paying, and we were also standing with our policeman friend, who I like to mention because I feel like it gives me credibility that I was there with, you know, an officer of the law.
In uniform?
No, he wasn't in uniform, because I would have liked to have got those bitches arrested. But, but right in front of my face, this time louder, they turn to me, and one of them goes, oh, bless. It's so cute.
Ooh.
And I just went, oh. I said, can I just ask, in my kind of school teacher voice, why you feel it's okay that you're completely objectifying me? And she did that kind of classic where they blank, like, la, 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 I can't hear, and started talking to one another like I no longer existed.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was just like, because, you know, I'm just here doing my shopping and my body doesn't need to be here for your comment. Or... Are you just very ignorant? Are you on drugs? Because if you're on drugs, at least I could kind of go, well, on a normal day-to-day basis, you know, you're kind of a nice, considerate person. And they were just so, I don't know how to, so ignorant that they actually didn't, they just couldn't understand the fact that I was even speaking to them.
So they just ignored you, sort of.
Yeah, and looked confused, like it was kind of, like as if what I was saying was really irrational. But and I was just, and I actually wasn't even shouting, I was being really just chatty.
Does that not get as equally frustrating as the "ah"?
Well, I then actually just said, I'm so sorry that this is what you're like. I pity that this is your natural state of being.
But then what was funny was exactly what I'd said to Kieran, or I wish I had said, I then had the opportunity to say, and no excuse not to say it. So I then went back to the girls and said, listen, just so you know, she's really not that cute. She's an absolute see you next Tuesday, rather than say the actual word. I did actually say the word at the time. They looked at me a little bit perplexed, and I went, yeah, I'm married to her. So...
It was just, I don't know what you do with it.
But they acknowledged you.
Did they?
No, I don't even think, I think even that, they. I think it just all was so surreal to them. That's what's weird about it.
Because the eyebrows were all slightly misplaced.
Yeah,
so
and drawn on.
So they could have been saying anything.
Yeah. I do feel the moment of the month has been hijacked by Gareth, and I am going to make it even worse. But obviously Kieran and I know that, and Gareth said it, if we spent our whole day looking for that, it'd be exhausting and demoralising and everything else. The bit I find really interesting, when I'm with somebody else, I might be out with Steve or you're... And someone else spots it, and then they have to decide whether they're going to tell the person, or they're going to do it. And that's kind of quite an interesting bit. Do you have a system for that?
Well, I think there is a system.
Well, it was difficult when we first got together, actually, because it was very new for Gareth, because Gareth's disability is less obvious unless he takes his shirt off, that people always assume he's non-disabled. Mm-hmm. And so Gareth was noticing it everywhere because for him it was very, very new.
Absolutely.
And obviously too, you know, he loved me and was falling in love with me at the time. So you're in that kind of weird, your eyes are wide open.
Was he allowed to say "ah" like that? If he was
presumably you would get quite protective and angry.
Well, massively.
Because this is brand new.
But he'd tell me about it. And the difficult thing is because sometimes I notice it, sometimes I don't notice it. But when you also fancy somebody at the beginning of a relationship, me noticing it, and then having it mirrored back to me by the person that I was falling in love with, even though he needed support from me in terms of how to deal with it, was difficult because I was kind of then almost copying it twice. So I was copying it as the person who was being discriminated against, and then I was copying it as the victim, but also the person who knew how to deal with it best and had the most experience and needed to support her partner. In kind of
complex.
That journey.
Well, you'd sit down and explain what was going on. And
well, do you know what? I would actually say on our first date, this was when I knew that Gareth was actually definitely up there in being a runner for being the one.
All right. I was close at that point.
Because on our very first date, a car drove past the two of us out together and somebody...
We'd only just left the house.
Only just left the house, wound their window down and yelled, "Grow up," at me, as if the direction had been the problem.
People shout that at you a lot, Steve, though, don't they? Yeah. On stage, usually.
Constantly. Yeah. I get that constantly.
There's a reason.
And my wife does that as well. So, yeah.
And what was really lovely was Gareth was the first boyfriend that I'd had at the time who didn't get all kind of cocky and, oh, it's not a problem and this stuff never upsets me. Gareth was actually the first boyfriend that went... Well, he waited, actually, which was lovely because he didn't want to spoil the date. And then I remember the next day he said, when that happens, how would you like me to handle it?
Great.
So he was actually the first boyfriend I'd had who properly actually maturely talked to me.
And had been on some disability equality training. Yeah.
And I guess kind of what we've settled on is if it's directed at me and I notice, I prefer Gareth to stand next to me in support but say nothing and let me speak. Because often me speaking actually bursts their little bubble in the first place. If Gareth notices and it comes into his kind of realm and it upsets him, but I haven't noticed, I'm happy for him to do what he needs to do. But at the same time, because he's an average height man, he needs to be careful that he doesn't get thumped.
Yeah.
Gareth, what about you? Is that your moment of the month? Have you got another
Well, that's pretty much my moment of the month. I mean, I suppose my moment of the month occasionally is service stations coming back from a gig if I've got my feed on or on my way to a gig, and I go to use the disabled toilet because I can change my backpack in a disabled toilet because there's room, and I also take it to be a more sterile environment.
Hang on, go back a step because people, listeners won't know.
Sorry, I've just said that.
The podcast, yeah. Is that the audio feed you meant?
No, sorry, yes. I should explain. I have a nutritional backpack that I wear probably every other day. Because I have short gut syndrome, which means I don't fully absorb nutrition that I eat. So I have a nutritional backup via a backpack. And it does mean that, you know, I won't use a disabled toilet if I don't need to use it. But when I'm connected to the backpack and I want to disconnect or reconnect, I'll use the disabled facilities. And obviously I get a few looks for walking in the disabled facilities. And the other one will be, which has happened only this month, I did a gig with the backpack on because I hadn't finished. And then what I have is an audience looking at, could you just relax? Just take your backpack off? Like, what is the matter with this guy?
You're here for 20 minutes. Yeah. You're not
Where's
going
he
anywhere.
Going?
And, but then you, but as a start, there's one of the questions later on, so I might bring it. But as a stand-up, you obviously then have to talk about
it. I have to talk about it. I've never felt comfortable to get away with wearing it for a gig, but not mentioning it.
But that's quite, I like that idea,
that's
though.
That's quite funny.
There's a lot of comedians who do it. I remember Booth Bugraffo just coming on with some juggling clubs and just doing his act and not mentioning
not
the clubs
them.
And then walking off with them, which is a nice...
Cogs will do it sometimes with his guitar or bring his guitar on. Yeah. And never actually play it. He'll have it on his back.
When What's you come on? Out of the disabled loo or the accessible loo and there's people there, do you then have to feign another one, like a limp of some sort?
No, the limp is always tempting.
Okay.
The limp is always tempting. What I tend to do is if I'm attached to the backpack, make a big show of pulling out the line and putting the line back in, and just to go like, I'm qualified.
But do they then go, ah?
No, I never get ours. I never get ours. Unfortunately, I wouldn't mind one or two, you know. I think I'm a cutie.
I won't, because you're here, Gareth, but I could call Kieran a cute, and that would be okay, because you would know I'm not saying cute and cuddly. I'm
no, because I get your politics, though.
Yes, exactly.
Because it's like once there's certain understandings that you get within friends that you start to be able to kind of, you know, play with things. But, yeah.
Thank you. Well, both of you. But thank you, Gareth, for your moment and Kieran a moment ago. Steve Best, our token non-disabled. Have you managed to rustle up a moment?
Actually, a couple, actually. And it's kind of related to Gareth, really, because we did a gig together recently. At the JW3.
Yes. Oh, was it the lift?
It was, no, the lift, what, the lift?
The special lift.
The special lift. It wasn't the special lift, because the special lift.
So the listeners, when Gareth and Steve start doing comedy-related stories, we lose them for about 25 minutes.
Yeah, sorry about that.
You might want to... No, I love it. Just to warm.
No, but I did notice, because it goes back to the point I said before about doing disability stuff in your set. So you were comparing that night, and I did notice that you didn't do anything about the disability.
Yes.
Why was that? Was that conscious?
No, it's because I can do comedy without talking about it, because I have the luxury of it's not something you see. So unless I come on stage with the backpack, an audience doesn't know that I have any disability. So if I choose not to talk about it, they don't need to know at all.
Okay. So that kind of was my... It wasn't really...
That's your non-disabled moment.
And Simon Minty, what about you?
I have a couple. One may even... There's a sort of overlap with you, Kieran, here. I got an email... asking for some actors. There was a corporate video being made around training. They said, do you know any disabled actors? And there was a few other bits. And I sent one to, I've got myself in trouble, to a short actress I know, and I didn't send it to you now. Why am I saying the story?
Good one.
You go red.
Was, I knew you were really busy. That's why. Anyway, I sent
it to
you.
You can't afford
person.
Me, and you know that.
You're too cute.
Camera would break.
And I didn't. I left it, and then I got an email a couple of months later from her, and she said, thank you so much. I got the work, and I'm doing it. And she said, and I'm thrilled because...
it was a good job then.
You just pipped my line. She said, I'm thrilled because it's a speaking part. And it made me just remember that bit of, more often than not, as a short person, you're going to get asked to dress up, and you're, as Lisa Hammond says, the warm prop.
Yeah.
And for this person, this was great, because this was I'm actually playing a human being rather than all the other stuff. So that was one little moment for me. The other bit was, we were at the Royal Festival Hall. We sometimes sort of have our meetings there about abnormally funny people. And at the Royal Festival Hall, on all the doors, as you walk in, there's a button that you can press, which is always to the right, and you press it. It's a tiny little button. You press it, and then the doors open. Right. But on these doors, to tell wheelchair users, other disabled people who want it, they put a big sort of metal round circular emblem with the wheelchair symbol on it. Mm-hmm. So I just happened to be standing by the door. I was on the phone at the time. And someone who, as far as I could tell, wasn't disabled, came up to the door. So she saw this big round circular thing on the door and thought that was the button. So I watched her for about a minute and I couldn't get off the phone. And she was just banging this button, which is the door, just to say this is the wheelchair door. And I wanted to try and point out to this other bit. It was just a joy watching this button banging this thing and it just wouldn't
There's
open.
Nothing's
going to
happen.
In the end, she did the thing that most people just pushed the door. But she was struggling around trying to get the button and it wasn't the right one.
I hate a fake button, but often the disability symbols that are telling you there's a button nearby look like a button.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Always. Yeah.
And sometimes you do get the big buttons that you just whack with anything. You can do it with an elbow or something. And it looked like it.
But... Do you know what? The one I genuinely have a question about, and we don't have anyone blind here for me to ask, unfortunately, is the one on the train that I find amusing and unusual is there's a braille sign sometimes in the toilet, which is about where the sink might be or where the flush is. And I always think, how does the blind person know what part of the wall the braille sign is on?
Yeah, and by the time
are they
felt
meant
it,
to
probably...
feel around the entire loo until they find some braille?
Yeah, but do you know what though? By the time they've felt up the toilet, they've probably found
the sink and
the hand dryer, the toilet. Yeah. Like it's just
And the train loo. Oh, that's the last place I'd want to put.
That's true.
And with the Virgin Tilt trains as well, you'd be like slipping and sliding.
Thank you very much for your moments. Coming up next, we're going to actually speak to Gareth and Kirina about their work and their projects.
And after that, we'll review the audiobook, Why Are You Pretending to Be Normal?
Have a question or a comment? You can also text us or leave a voicemail on 07756-190-561.
Okay, Kirina, before we start talking to you properly, we're just going to have a little clip of you actually acting opposite Geoffrey Rush, and this is in the film Deception.
I was wondering if you saw a woman leave the villa.
Medium height, light hair, a bit pale.
Yes.
That time was 231.
Are you sure?
Then another six. In a year and a half, I saw her go out. 237 times.
What did I say? She's a phenomenon. She remembers everything.
It's not possible.
You were at the villa 63 times, 36 during the day, and 27 at night, excluding the night of the accident.
Okay, so Kirina, I've known you for a little while. I have a confession. I sneaked in. When I say sneaked in, I didn't. I bought a ticket and everything and came and saw you in Great Britain.
Did you?
I did. It was the play at the National Theatre, then it transferred.
Yeah, it transferred to the West End. Did you see it at the National?
Yes.
So you saw the longer version.
Oh, I didn't know it changed.
Yeah,
okay.
there was a bit of snippity snip between
that. So there's a double whammy. There's a bit of, this is someone I know who's on stage and that's exciting and thrilling and everything else. The other bit was, it happened to be a disabled character, but that's because that just happened to be something like that in real life. And for me, you held your own. I thought it was fabulous. I don't know, what was it like to be at the National Theatre playing that role?
It was a great opportunity and amazing. I was also very lucky, I think, because the scenes were slightly tweaked after I was cast to account for my size, although the character that I play, Wendy Clinkard, doesn't actually have my disability. I did have to crip up, which was a whole different discussion. It was very interesting, though, because I think still, even though, you know, I've got a lot of credits and training behind me, I would say that for a few people, it was still a shock to see me in the rehearsal room. And I think Lisa Hammond actually talks a little bit about the seven stages of being sort of the only disabled person in the rehearsal room, where you know a little bit that you're surprising people that you're able to do. So unfortunately, it's not that I didn't feel like I was on a level playing field. I felt that it was a little bit like sometimes, I guess because I'd done a lot of work. But that work is done within a disability arts context. Audiences aren't necessarily familiar with it. And suddenly you're working in a mainstream capacity. And so...
Even with the... which I'm surprised. Even with the kind of creative types, the actors, they were surprised slightly as well. I mean, I always
Unless
thought they're very
Unless they've gone
open.
Out of their way to Google me, I think.
Really?
A little bit. I think, a little bit. And I feel mean saying that, because if any of them actually listen to this, they'd probably be upset that I think that. But just in terms of first day, some of the conversations I did have with some members of sort of the creative team, I could tell that, you know, their expectations of me were quite low.
Wow.
And they wouldn't have meant that. It's just, you know.
I've also realised Mike was a very clumsy way. You didn't hold your own. You were great. That's what I meant to say. I mean, this is a kind of a baldy comedy, and there's some really unpolitically correct stuff in there. There was one bit that I found, it might have just been the night that I went, and there was lots of dodgy jokes around ethnicity or disability and stuff like that. And then at one point, and the audience laughed. I mean, they were really laughing. And then the night I went, there was a joke, a reference to your height, I think it was. And the audience didn't laugh. They sort of went, ooh.
There was a grumble. That was different night to night. It was interesting, actually, because I had a couple of people on Twitter get in touch with me and say, oh, I don't get it. The audience were really comfortable with some of the racism and some of the home, the gay gags.
Yeah.
But when you were there, they couldn't quite chill out with the disability stuff. And I think the difference was that my body was on stage at the time the jokes were being said.
Interesting.
So that's my theory. What was very interesting for me as well, there were a couple of moments where something went wrong on stage, like a chair was put in slightly the wrong position. And so because of my size, me and furniture is always a bit of a fumble. But it was very interesting how uncomfortable the audience were with what they perceived as real disability on stage. So even though I was acting, and I was actually acting more disabled, sorry, more mobility impaired than I actually am, it was interesting that when the chair was maybe 1 or 2 inches away from the table and on a rake, that suddenly actually being able to sit down became a bit of an issue. But you could tell the tension was like, it was almost like its own mini performance.
But as a comedy, you would have thought that people would just take that as part of a bit of slapsticky.
No, this is what's really interesting, because I think this kind of tension was also a new experience for the cast and directors.
Oh, so they could
there
relax
was a
with
real
it as well.
Difference between the audience suddenly deciding your pain and disability is real versus you're faking it so it's okay to laugh at. And because they didn't know, because my body is non-conformist, it was interesting how there was a natural tension that wasn't always there for the other bodies in space, which I found actually quite interesting and actually an area that I would love to have pushed more, because what I feel is that's not actually anything to do with my acting or performance, but more that we don't see diversity represented very much. But it's interesting that I think sometimes others make more timid choices, because that real tension of, oh, my God, she's not going to be able to sit down on the chair. What do we do? This is so embarrassing. Is also falling into their own realm of discomfort. Whereas I go, no, I love it. Make him have to watch me get on a chair. That, you know, but that's me.
It's not that
you
part
know.
Of it. Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting.
I mentioned at the beginning of the show, originally a dancer. I can't remember how I came across this clip, and I'm not stalking you, but I found a clip of you, it might have been by your blog, and you were dancing at Ronnie Scott's.
That's new.
Instagram. It's my Instagram.
It was phenomenal, and on so many levels. The bit, it looked like you had suddenly jumped out of the crowd and just suddenly did a spot. The people were watching going, we're not sure where this is going. And then you just blow the roof off. And just as a fellow short person who can hardly walk 3 steps, the leg movement and your dancing, it was phenomenal. I just watched it and I was beaming because I just thought, this is awesome. It was great to watch. And then, as you always do, you start looking at the audience and thinking, where are they going? Was that improvised?
Ronnie Scott's actually does once a month an improvised tap night. And I'd never been before, and it was my last day down in London for sort of, you know, my parents were visiting from Sydney, Gareth was over, and I just kind of went, oh, do you know what? We're in London. They're doing an improv night. I've never done it before. I mean, I've done a lot of tap improv. I didn't just suddenly whack on tap shoes and poof, I can tap
dance. I've done this before,
You're pretty good.
And I signed up, and I literally used sort of 3 minutes, 4 minutes with the musicians.
Yeah.
And it was one of the most thrilling and exciting things. I'd love to more regularly do it, actually. But I was just live improvising with the musicians in the space. And that was what the night at Ronnie Scott's is about, for the tap dancers, a live tap jam.
It was great. And I have to say, as someone who was there...
I filmed it, and I know
what she's capable of as a tap dancer. What I can't presume to know what everyone was thinking, but what I definitely did feel like is that up till then, the standard of tap dancers who'd already been on ranged from, you know, experts to newbies doing their stuff. And I totally felt an atmosphere when Kiruna went up of exactly those girls outside the Tesco, bless. That this Where was going to be go? Like, yeah. Oh, this will be interesting, and bless, and we'll give her a round of applause.
Clappy, clappy, clappy.
And what's great, and you can see it in the clip, so it's on my Instagram, I think, you see it on the clip, is Kiruna's so cocky, because she is really good at tap. She was doing great. It really blew them away and surprised them. And what I loved most in it, which is in the clip you saw, is when she just rubs her chest with her hands.
That's it,
like,
that's it.
And it's kind of like, yeah, I know I'm good.
Yeah.
And
I did
it was
get
brilliant.
Really cocky
and it was because she was really happy.
It just oozes. We will put a clip on our website, if that's all right.
But yeah,
it
please.
Just oozed confidence. And to watch that, it was in the best sense, it was inspirational, but not in that tacky sense. In that
but do you know
way.
What I think is? The thing I love about dance and why I'm really glad that I started with it is because people look at our bodies and they make such ridiculous judgments. And the thing about dancing is that it is literally just me and my body in space going, yeah, look at it. And here's a skill that I can do. And I'm allowed to feel all of this emotion. And what's really bizarre is when I dance, I genuinely, and if I've not danced for a while, I genuinely feel such huge amounts of joy. But it's definitely also coming from the disabled experience where in the back of my head, there's kind of me giving all of the world and society a giant, I'm flipping the bird. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's kind of a sense of this says everything you need to know about me without words.
Thanks, Kiruna. And Gary, we now have Gareth. We got a bit of your stand-up. You're a stand-up comedian and
I
an
am,
actor. So we're
going
to listen to a little bit of your stand-up.
Thank
from
you.
The, where was this from?
It could be the 99 Club. It might be in Sydney.
I think it was the Sydney one.
Oh, great.
Max, it's good to be here. I'll be honest with you, I got here the same way this evening as most of the rest of the acts on the bill, in that I was bullied at school. Thanks for your sympathy there, Sydney. You all just looked at me and went, yeah, f*** it, you were bullied, right? I was bullied at school, right, but the good news, just to bring us together as a room for a minute, right, the good news, I did eventually beat up the school bully. Yeah! Yeah, it was 25 years later, it wasn't my school, wasn't my bully, but f*** it, you give it a go, right? I've never seen an 11-year-old girl cry that hard.
So you've just got you had a part in Coronation Street.
Yeah.
And how have you found that from the move from stand-up?
Amazing
to acting?
And great fun. I mean, because the pressure's on when you do stand-up in terms of you write and direct yourself and you have to come up with new stuff and there's a lot of pressure. And with no disrespect to actors, which is an incredible craft, I could, you know, I'm only just beginning to get into.
I'm turning into a lovey already there.
Yeah,
like that.
Thanks. What's nice is just having someone give you the lines. What's interesting about Corrie, which I didn't realise till working on it, is that there's very little direction in the script, and they knew I was a comic when they took me on, which I think helped them take me on. Because they're trusting people to go with their own judgment. You only get about 3 takes per kind of few lines
or
scenes.
That's also very unusual for you to kind of improvise slightly on a kind of mainstream.
Yeah, and
show.
There was room, and they trusted. So my very first scene, very first couple of scenes, I was in a pub scene, and I chat up someone who's like a main character in Corrie. And within the lines, it just said something about, you must have felt it, you know, that feeling of electricity when we first met.
Was it French character?
Yeah, it was a French character.
It was in the studio. That was
and in the script, it didn't say anything other than you must have felt it. It was like electricity. And I just thought it was funny to lean forward, touch her and kind of spark my finger and blow it out. Nice. And it made the actress laugh. So they kept it in.
Yeah.
And actually, further on in the scene, my character grabs her hand in coming onto her. And both of us by that point decided, no, this guy wouldn't do that. He's an idiot, but he's not rude. He's not nasty. He's just, you know, a harmless idiot. So that's me. I've now got a part playing a harmless idiot in Coronation Street. It's quite nice.
I love that Gareth has actually got to have the experience of acting and he's doing so well in it. Because as his wife, it's really nice now that he gets
the money.
What I have to get. Oh, no, the money. Oh, I want to be a kept woman.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, please offer him 3 years. Please offer him.
Presumably you really wanted to have that electricity, this woman, because then you would have a longer-term part if she's a main character.
Yeah, but I didn't even think about it. What's been lovely is that
he's going to try and get them pregnant the next
year. I'm going for it. I'm going for it. She actually
the
is pregnant.
Said,
she actually is pregnant.
Rush her back, but I thought, you know what? Push her up against the wall
but
and
then
just
the other
get one in there.
The other boyfriend might come and shoot you and knock you out.
I might get in trouble.
This next next little bit, we thought we need to have a question where you both talk because about your joint projects. And clearly we've needed that because you're both very separate people. But you do work together. And you is One of Us Will Die. Is that the name of your kids' show? Is that
That's
right?
Simon.
So I didn't mean to do a joke there. Oh, and their kids' show. Yeah. Oh, script.
Yeah, I wrote the script.
One of Us Die is joint stand-up?
Yes.
Yeah.
And you have a Pirate and Parrot kids'
which
show.
Which is a kids' show.
Which is theatre.
Which is theatre.
Yeah, and we worked with...
Although it's very funny theatre, kids' show.
Yeah.
Really funny.
And we co-created that with another theatre company, which was Red Earth Theatre Company. So they gave us the direction and helped us devise it. So it was that was a little commitment, and Red Earth Theatre Company, because they've got a lot of children and family-friendly theatre in their repertoire, whereas, you know...
We were newbies.
We were newbies at that. So that was a collaboration.
And how is it, because Steve and I are good friends, and we squabble all the time when we're working together. So how is it with you two? I mean, have you got a system?
I think we're like 75% easy. That's what I think, in how we work together. I think... 75% of the time, bang on, and maybe clash heads, 25%.
Okay. What do you think we are, Simon? The other way around?
Who knows what the numbers are? Who knows?
What do you think, Kieran? Are you about to say we only clash 10% and I've just made it sound really bad?
I think when we did Pirate and Parrot together, because it was our first theatre production, it was really helpful. We had the outside eye of the directors, because I think sometimes when I had something in my background and I brought it to the table... because it was sort of something in my skill base, you took it a little bit like, oh, my nagging wife is speaking.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think I did take it
so
harsher from you.
So you sometimes needed to hear from somebody else, even though maybe I already knew it.
Yeah. I think that's more like 60%, 40%.
I think you're right. I think you're right. 60%
but,
of the time,
I mean, you know, we're still together, so...
Yeah.
We're not doing the shows anymore.
We don't know how long for, but, you know...
We haven't phoned Relate.
No.
So we must be doing something right.
Yeah.
Find us on Twitter or Facebook by searching for Abnormally Funny People or using the hashtag AFP Show.
So this month we have a book with a curious title, Why Are You Pretending to Be Normal? By Phil Friend and David Rees.
The authors, Phil Friend is a disability consultant. He's also the former chair of the Disability Rights UK. And Dave Rees is a professional trainer and a coach. This book describes the social model of disability through a character, Chris, who meets and talks with various people. Let's listen to a short clip.
I reflected on the purpose of my visit. I was surprised at how anxious I was feeling and wondered how I should start such a sensitive conversation about disability with a complete stranger. I knew that I wanted to make the most of the discussion with him, but was wary of talking about my personal situation with someone whom I had only just met. I was also puzzled because Dawn had said that George was disabled, and yet I couldn't see anything obviously wrong with him. With that thought in mind, I decided that I should take the initiative and drive the agenda. Taking a deep breath, I plunged in. "It's really good of you to spare the time to see me, George. Dawn said that you might share your knowledge of disability with me and that it would help me to manage my disability more effectively." Then, a little more nervously, I added, "Perhaps you could start by telling me what's wrong with you." George's answer took me by surprise. "There's nothing wrong with me," he exclaimed. "What's wrong with you?" Oops, not an encouraging start. I tried frantically to rephrase the question. "Sorry, I didn't mean to," I stammered, fidgeting about uncomfortably on the sofa. "What I meant was, what's the matter with you? What's your disability?" I felt incredibly stupid and embarrassed. What was I doing, asking such a personal question so soon? We'd only just met. Had I offended George before our conversation had really begun?
So there we go. So, Mr. Minty, before we go on with this, you know Mr. Phil Friend, don't you?
I do, yes, in the sort of... needing
biblical
to
sense.
Full disclosure, I ran a business with him for about 10 years. Wow. And we're very good friends. And actually, some of the stuff in the book I do remember because we use the material. So I will try and be
impartial.
Not biased.
Yes.
Yeah, thanks for the word.
So there we go. So, Kieran, so what did you think of the book, of the audiobook?
I really enjoyed it. It was interesting for me because what was bizarre was in my own kind of disability journey, and act which really, in terms of heavy ownership of the concept of myself as a disabled person and the social model, that really began for me when I first came to England. So I felt like I'd experienced the book, but the people I was speaking to all had different names. So for me, that was actually quite an interesting experience to have my own experience very kind of closely mirrored, although mine was sort of more through the disability arts circuit and accidentally stumbling upon these conversations, whereas this character had kind of signed up to a number of sessions and pre-organised meetings. I thought it was actually very nicely done and a very nice introduction to kind of the social model of disability.
Gareth, I mean, what do you think?
Well, I thought quite similar to Kirana in that, but for me, sort of a lot of my education on disability really has come, I feel like, in the last 3 or 4 years that Kirana and I have been married and together, in that I've sort of explored it far more and the politics, etc. I enjoyed it and also just reminded me that, again, of people I'd met, yourself, Mandy Colleran, Julie McNamara, certain people that have given me those kind of lessons the character picks up within the book just through conversation. And it reminded me a lot of books that I found helpful when I was a lot younger and didn't identify as disabled, but that were self-help books where kind of a character would go on a journey, meet several characters. It may have happened, it may not have happened, but they represent emotions and feelings you need to go through.
It's kind of quite nice because both of you have had your impairment, as we're using now the language of the book, which is Disabled Because of the World. And you've had them for a while. The book was written aimed at people who might have become disabled, perhaps recently, and there's that kind of transition of where I'm about and something has changed. But what you're both saying is you sort of went through that, even though you had a pre-existing impairment, it was just that enlightenment moment.
Maybe. Well, I think as a borny, to steal a term that I borrowed off Liz Carr, who I steal a lot of jargon off, I think you actually do go through a similar journey. It's just that it happens earlier and it's less of a shock. So I think for me, as a woman with dwarfism, you're a child and you're small. But children are small, that's fine. You do notice that people are a bit different towards you in terms of the way you look, but you're still a child, so there's no responsibility for that. That adults are just being a bit weird and that's their problem. Then you go through puberty and you realise you're a short adult and that that's different. And I think it was sort of from becoming a woman where I seemed to, in the eyes of society, not have an adolescence. I just became a weird short adult without that, oh, you're a teenager.
But
it happens then.
No, the title of the book is Why You Pretend to Be Normal. The bit that I've always said about me is, this is my normal. So the fact that, I know people do find it abnormal, but this is my normality. So for me, I suppose what the book's saying is if you have something, you don't have to force yourself to try and fit in.
Yeah.
You should be strong and understand and manage and all the other things. So yes, I'm slightly answering your question. I mean, sorry, Gareth.
What I did really like it about it in terms of empowerment and in terms of some of the lessons it was imparting were, you know, I remember Mandy Colleran talking to me about, I have an impairment, society is what's disabling for me, you know. So, and that's almost the same lesson that occurs in the book. I found it really helpful that kind of those things were there. And talking about language, and what I loved, I remember a moment in the book where he was talking about, I'm suffering with. And someone said, I'm not suffering with anything. I have this, and I live with this.
So let's keep this Radio 4 front row sort of moment going. Steve Best, what were in terms of the book review as a token non-disabled person?
I read the book because I know Phil quite well as well.
Yes, there is a hard copy.
Yeah, and so I've know Phil, and he showed me the book, and you showed me the book. For me, I suppose, because of being around you, Simon, and for the last 10 years with the disability, normally funny people as well, I've kind of learnt more that way as well. But I think you're right. I think it's someone who, for someone who's acquired a disability, it must be very much an eye-opener. For me, learning about it, it's more about the semantics, I suppose, the words that you think, oh, yeah, that does make sense. And a kind of a cognitive shift in how people perceive disability. That's the thing. I think it's quite subtle in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I did enjoy it.
And bearing in mind it's an audio book, sort of production and the voice, was that all agreeable, acceptable?
It was. I actually felt maybe it could have gone a bit further in that, because it because of the way it was retelling conversations, I actually felt you could have done it almost as a radio play. So you would have had the written book and then actually had the performed kind of radio play version. But that's me being an actress kind of going, I want all the other characters to come in and I want to hear all of their different voices.
So that's good, you could tell the guys to turn it into a play.
No, but this is what's interesting, though, is that I think it's kind of a brilliant seed of an idea that you could actually roll out into different formats because it is so clear and so nicely structured.
As an educational, you know, if you turn it into a play that was for theatre and education to teach sort of primary and secondary schools about disability, or if they had a student that was, you know, a new student to a school that was disabled, be a really good sort of play.
But I did actually think it was very good in that it's something I would refer to other people.
Yeah.
Although there were conversations as a disabled person I felt I'd already had, it's something I would definitely recommend other people.
But I do think if I had not been part of the disabled community through my work with Abnormally Funny People, etc., finding a book like this when I was struggling to understand things would have been a massive help.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great praise, that is. So the audiobook is available from audible.co.uk and there's a printed version available on Amazon.
And next up, we're going to speak with Robin for all the tech news.
If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please leave us a review or a rating on Audioboom and iTunes.
Welcome, Robin Christopherson from AbilityNet, who is going to talk to us about some tech and gadgets.
Robin, for those who don't know, who are AbilityNet and what do you do for them?
So I'm head of digital inclusion, which is a very grand title. I do sort of public speaking and lots of presentations and things on tech, which is what AbilityNet is all about. We're a UK charity with the leading experts on disability and technology, which is actually quite easy to say because we're the only pan-disability, pan-technology charity out there. So
you've got a monopoly on it all.
That's right, yeah. Any questions you've got at all about, you know, whether you've got dyslexia or your grandmother's, you know, losing her vision, and any kind of technology, how technology can help to make people's lives better.
I've worked with you guys before, and you kind of do both big companies stuff, but you also do individual person who might have a computer at home.
Absolutely. We're brazenly commercial when it comes to delivering consultancy to make people's websites or apps better. And then we give it to, it's like Robin Hood, really. We give it to disabled people for free, with free services, you know, assessments and IT support and things like that.
So, Robin, what's your kind of news? What's first up this month?
Well, I mean, I've got to talk about the Apple Watch, really, this fabled watch that hasn't even, you know, it's not a reality yet, although we got a few sneak peeks at it. But, you know, smartphones have been revolutionising the lives of disabled people. I myself am blind for several years now. And I don't need to tell your listeners probably how empowering and exciting technology is to be a leveller, you know, to level the playing field for people with different disabilities. And obviously wearables is this next kind of wave of gadgets that people are getting excited about. And for people with disabilities, there is some very direct benefits, you know, being able to monitor your health with lots of trackers and gadgets that even can tell your blood pressure and blood sugar levels in some cases, and then feed that into a central repository like, for example, Apple have Health, which is an app on iOS, and HealthKit, which is what powers it. Talks to all these different devices, etc. So it's very accessible. Like with everything that Apple does, it's incredibly accessible. So it's a really, you know, it's the obvious choice for people to use. And if you're blind, for example, like me, and you can't read a standard blood pressure monitor or even your, you know, bathroom scales or any kind of gadgets really, unless they're very expensive specialist ones, then this Internet of Things, as it's called, this new wave of gadgets, a lot of them wearable, that can talk to your phone via Bluetooth, and then you can look on your phone screen and you can have it spoken back to you like I would, or if you've got some vision, then you can have it magnified using the zoom magnification on iDevices, or you could have it sent to a Braille display, for example. So there are so many...
I was just going to ask the when you talk about the iWatch, there are other watches out there already, haven't they?
There are Android Wear, which is the sort of operating system that, Google have put out has been around for about a year now, and there are a range of them. LG have done a few, Samsung have done a few, and Motorola, the 360, is the most popular one out there.
Fantastic. And so we've got to move on a little bit. So you've got a second item there.
Well, one other thing that has actually hit the mainstream news as well, which is a disability specific app in this case. Again, it's vision related, but apologies, next time I'll do stuff that's other areas as well. But
looking after yourself, Robin. Okay,
this is an app called Be My Eyes.
Oh, we talked about that last month.
Yes, We have talked about this. What do you think? In a nutshell.
Yeah, since you broke it last month, it's been all over the headlines. So you guys, it's thanks to you guys. Mm-hmm. What I wanted to say was now, though, that it's broken the 2K, the 2,000 registered blind users, and something like 4,500 sighted volunteers. And for me personally, I wanted to flag it because it is literally a very, very simple idea and a real life changer. Lots of people haven't got
Pair of eyes available. I'm sure everyone listens to every podcast, but in a nutshell, this is the blind person deciding which tie to wear and they can't tell the colour. So they point the camera phone at that and there'll be a person who is sighted who will see and say, oh, that's a red one, it doesn't go with
Fantastic.
That shirt.
Absolutely. And obviously ties, very important. But the 50 times a day that a blind person might really struggle to do something which does require a pair of eyes. Mm. In some instances, out and about, you could be, in quite a dangerous situation, and to have a pair of eyes on hand would be really useful. It has been used by a lot of other people, though. People, I know it says, either blind or volunteer when you download the app, and anyone can become a volunteer. But if you want, to be a consumer, then you tap on the I am blind one. But actually a lot of people with other disabilities, print disabilities, dyslexia, learning difficulties, cognitive difficulties, etc., have been benefiting from it as well.
But is there quality control though?
I was going to say, we had a naughty one last month, Robin, that we had Matt Fraser and Liz Carr on, and they said, yes, is there quality control? Couldn't someone just really be naughty and muck around with this, or how does that work?
They absolutely can. When you sign up as the blind person, you're encouraged not to point the camera anywhere incriminating or compromising. And there is a block facility. There's a rating of volunteers. Mm. So there is potential for it to be misused by the volunteer and by the blind person. But it's got all the sort of balances, the checks and measures that make it useful and relatively safe.
I love the idea. That's why I spotted it and I thought this is a great idea. As ever, we could listen to you for quite a while. I know you've got to go, actually. So thank you so much, Robin. If people want to follow Robin, he has a Twitter feed, and it's at USA and then the number 2 day. Did I say that properly? USA number 2 day. And you can also check out more about AbilityNet by going to the website, which, not surprisingly, abilitynet.org.uk.
And it'll be lovely. Can we speak to you next month?
Oh, a pleasure.
Fantastic. Thanks very much, Robin.
Thanks all.
If you'd like to get in touch, you can email us on podcast@abnormallyfunnypeople.com.
We're coming to the end of the show, and we'll read out your emails and tweets in a moment. A big thank you to Kirana and Gareth for coming onto the show. But before you go, what are you up to right now?
Well, I just finished my level 1 British Sign Language exam today, so I'm going to have a little bit of a break.
Congratulations.
But work-wise, I've actually got quite a few projects pending, but nothing that I've signed off on, so I actually can't legally say anything.
This is very showy. Gareth's glovy, you're show busy, this is great. You're really in there deep.
I tell you what I'm up to. I haven't done my final exam yet in BSL, so I will be doing some revision this weekend. And then I'm hoping that if I'm lucky, I might get back to Corrie. I'm not sure. But otherwise, I will be gigging around the country as per usual.
We will put up links to the various things we've talked about and obviously to your shows, your productions and various other bits. So thank you so much for both of you. It's been a joy and really fun to have you.
Thank you, Mr. Minty and Mr. Best. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having us. It's been special.
It's been very special.
You're special.
You're special.
Oh, bless the two of you.
Find us on Twitter or Facebook by searching for Abnormally Funny People or using the hashtag AFP Show.
Have had some contact. A friend in the USA wrote to me. She's just discovered the podcast, and so she listened to all 8 shows on her commute sort of to and from work, doing a sort of marathon session. But that was great.
That's very lovely. And Cheryl Green sent us some video clips of her cooking. She has a brain injury, and she's put all those, we can put those links up for you.
Very good. Another friend, Sarah Brown, she'd been listening to this show, and I got kind of confused. She said, she'd listened at home over 2 days, recovering from a back operation. It looks like she was almost joining the disability gang there.
And we've had some tweets. Dorothy Lauder, University of Chester, said, just started listening to you at show 8 and was very happy because she's going through having a hearing test, which we talked about that.
That show, a couple of shows back, the hearing one, we've had quite a lot of good comments about that, and we're apparently very reassuring to everybody, which is worrying. We've heard from Christina Venning. She really enjoyed the latest podcast, and she's got one of her own, which we haven't checked out. Maybe we need to do a review of that. That's called The White Noise Show.
And as seems to be the case, if you've missed the earlier podcast, you can go back and listen to all the shows on Audio Boom or iTunes. And please keep writing in. We're loving this.
Do keep sending in ideas for things you'd like us to review. The book we just did, Why Are You Pretending to Be Normal? That was someone, they sent it in and said, will you review it? So it might be a book, might be film, television show, stand-up comedy, anything you want us to have a little
look at. And we've got Comic Relief 2015 coming up. We've been asked to get involved, so we'll keep you posted if anything happens. Actually, by the time this podcast comes out, we might have released it, so you'll know already.
And with every show, there will be a transcript of the podcast on our website.
And thanks to our producer, Anne Scantlebury.
And thank you to all of you for listening.